Allagash, Maine, 20th of August, 1976. The sun hangs low as four men make their way along a well-worn trail. They are laden with backpacks and taking turns carrying their canoe. Up ahead, there is a break in the trees. "We've made it," says Jack, as he finally sets his eyes on their destination, Big Eagle Lake. His twin brother Jim replies, "And just in time, we won't have much more sunlight. Let's get camp set up." The two men go about their tasks, clearing their sight, pitching tents and collecting firewood. "I don't know about you," says Charlie, "but I'm starving after that hike. Let's do some night fishing." The men agree. "We'll need to make a bonfire on the beach," says Chuck, who the others had asked to come along because of his knowledge of the wilderness. "You know how dark it gets this far up north." The men had all met at art school back in Massachusetts. The brothers, Jim and Jack, had known Charlie for some time, and although Chuck was new to the group, they had made fast friends. He had proven a great addition on this trip. The men felt they needed a vacation, some time away from the daily grind, to recharge and experience some much-needed inspiration. It was a cool night, deep in the wilderness of Aroostook County, Maine. After the four friends finished making their bonfire, they were ready to set out onto the dark waters of the lake. "That should last a few hours," explained Jim, while he placed one last log onto the fire. They hopped into the canoe and pushed off, causing ripples to spread across the pristine waters. Charlie sat at the front, the twins in the center, and Chuck taking up the rear. The last vestiges of light crept through the trees surrounding the lake, and the beauty of the Allagash sky came into full display. "Incredible," said Jack, patting his brother on the shoulder, directing his gaze skyward. As they slowly made their way further out onto the lake, Chuck started to feel uneasy. He knew it was impossible, being this far into the wilderness, but it was as though he was being watched. He turned to look behind him, and that's when he saw it. There, hanging in the sky, was a pulsing, white-hot sphere, glowing like a second sun. It lit the treetops on the other side of the lake as if it were midday. A nameless dread rose in the pit of Chuck's stomach. He had a bad feeling about this. The Allagash Abductions, a bite-sized fright. This series contains disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised.
"Hey, look at that,"
Chuck managed to stammer out. Without even needing to ask where, the other three men instinctively turned in the direction of the light. For a time, they simply sat in disbelief. What was it? Helicopter? Plane? Or something else? Something unfathomable. "I'm going to try something," said Charlie, as he gripped his flashlight. He turned on the light and cupped his hand over the bulb, blinking off a message in Morse code. He signaled the letters S.O.S. Suddenly, the glowing sphere let out a beam of light, as if in response. The men's initial reaction was elation. Were they really communicating with this thing? Could it possibly be from another world? Their excitement died quickly, as without warning, the burning globe descended, careening towards the campers at incredible speed. "We've got to get out of here," one of the men yelled, as they all took up oars, paddling desperately at the inky black water beneath. If they could only make it to the nearby forest, maybe they could somehow evade the mysterious craft and hide in the overgrown trees. Their efforts, however, were in vain. They soon found themselves bathed in the terrifying object's glow. Then, within seconds, they were on the beach, staring up at the shining craft now hovering above them, so close that it seemed as though they could reach out and touch it. The light flickered, swayed, and then rocketed into the sky, blending in with the starry night that had so captivated the men when they first set out onto Big Eagle Lake. The friends, tired and weary after what had only seemed to be 20 minutes, made their way to their beds, not realizing that the bonfire, which should have burned for several hours, was nothing but embers dying in the darkness. 12 years passed, and Jim Weiner had almost forgotten the bright light that he and his friends had witnessed while camping in the Allagash Wilderness in the summer of 1976. Oddly enough, considering how unbelievable their encounter had been, the men had not talked about it much as they made their way out of the forest and back to their everyday lives. They did report the event to the authorities. The police told them that they had simply seen spotlights from a local store celebrating its grand opening, which the friends never thought could possibly be true. They were miles into the deep woods that summer. They had left civilization long behind them. Friends and family did not give their story much credence either. They chalked it up to overactive imaginations and too much booze. It was not long before they decided to keep their story to themselves, rather than deal with any more ridicule and sideways glances. Jim put it out of his mind and moved on with his life. That is, until he suffered an unfortunate accident, leaving him with a head injury. It was then that the nightmares began. Jim awakes to find himself in a cold and barren room. He is unable to move his extremities, but searching furtively with his eyes, he finds his brother Jack and his friends Chuck and Charlie sitting motionless next to him. To his surprise, the men have been stripped of their clothes and are staring straight ahead, eyes barren and lifeless. Jim continues to search the brightly lit room for some clue as to where they are. Where were they only moments ago? In their canoe on Eagle Lake? Then, suddenly, there is motion in the room. Something is coming towards him. From within the blinding light, Jim begins to make out a form. As the being reveals itself, Jim realizes it is a creature like nothing he has ever seen before. Its arms, unusually long and gangling, hang limply at its sides. At the end of each arm are slender, four-fingered hands. Its neck is eerily elongated. The most arresting feature, however, are its massive, almond eyes, sunk deep in a head too large to be human. Jim desperately wishes he could move. He tries in vain to will his body to do something, anything, as the being draws closer. He wants to cry out, to fight back with all his strength, to attack the monster, but he can do nothing but stare at the approaching creature. Suddenly, he hears a voice. The thing before him has no mouth that Jim can see, and yet he hears it speak in plain English. It is telling him that he has nothing to fear from them. They are only here to observe. The next moment his friend Charlie is lying on a table before him. There are several more creatures now. Are they scientists? Doctors? They are scanning his body as if they are trying to divine the secrets of sinew and bone. They call upon some kind of device unlike any Jim has ever seen. It scrapes Charlie's skin, takes samples of his blood and tissue, and who knows what else. He appears to be writhing in pain from the procedure, his head reared back and his face frozen in a grotesque, silent scream. Jim awakens suddenly to find himself in the safety of his home. "What the hell was that?" he says aloud. He runs to the bathroom and splashes some water on his face. He is shaken by what he just saw, the image of the creature still fresh in his mind. He does his best to try to forget it, and although it takes most of the night, he finally finds sleep. At first, the terrifying images only come to him at night in his dreams, but soon he finds himself experiencing seizures, his body quaking against his will, causing him to pass out. In this state, he is thrust back into that frigid, sterile room to face the bug-eyed creatures and their experiments. He suffers the horrors of his mind for many weeks before a chance conversation with his brother reveals that he is not alone. In 1947, a man named Kenneth Arnold reported sightings of what he described as flying saucers in the skies of Mineral, Washington. A few weeks later, news of a crashed spacecraft at a ranch near Roswell, New Mexico was splashed across the papers. The fervor for beings from outer space visiting Earth took firm root in the public consciousness. It dominated cinema and pop culture, found its way into every newspaper, and would even find a home on nightly newscasts. It was not until Betty and Barney Hill's encounter with what they described as gray alien creatures whilst driving the roads of rural New Hampshire at night that the idea of abduction became the phenomenon it is today. Jim and Jack Weiner, along with Charlie Faltz, were students at the Massachusetts College of Art and became good friends. In the summer of 1976, they decided to get away for a few days in the Allegash Wilderness Waterway. As none of the men were very well acquainted with the area, they asked a fellow student at the college, Chuck Rock, to join them as a guide. The first day out in the Allegash was relaxing and uneventful, just how they wanted it. They meandered along the river, camping and fishing, but on the second night, while staked out at Chamberlain Lake, they saw something none of them could explain. In the night sky, Jim noticed a bright light, sitting motionless over the treetops. He called to the rest of the group, urging them to come and take a look, and examined the object with a pair of binoculars. It hung there for a few fleeting moments before winking out of existence. The men convinced themselves that the mysterious light must have been a helicopter or some other sort of aircraft. But nonetheless, the incident did not sit well with them. On the fourth and fateful night, they had set their tents on the banks of Eagle Lake and experienced their now infamous encounter. What happened to the men, now known as the Allegash Four, was a complete mystery to them for many years, until Jim Weiner's accident and the ensuing nightmares. When Jim discovered that his twin, Jack, was having the same disturbing visions, he reached out to paranormal investigator Raymond Fowler at a UFO convention in 1988. Fowler believed that the four men had been abducted by aliens and subjected to a battery of tests, although he did not initially disclose his suspicions to them. Fowler suggested that the four men try hypnotic regression, a technique which allows a person to enter a trance-like state and, through therapeutic suggestion, revert to an earlier age to relive a prior moment in their lives with greater clarity and understanding. In 1989, the men each agreed to meet with Anthony Constantino, an expert in hypnosis and regression therapy, in order to attempt to relive the events of that fateful August night in 1976. At first, they kept their sessions to themselves. Later, the men were shocked to find out that each of them shared the same horrifying story. The brightly lit, sterile room, the cold, slab-like table, each of them waiting their turn, naked and unable to move, until they were taken by the creatures to be examined. Their alien tormentors, the spitting image of the gray alien from the tales of Betty and Barney Hill, with their enlarged heads and dark, unblinking eyes, bored into the men with an array of terrible instruments. The initial nightmares of Jim and Jack Weiner would seem a mere echo compared to what the hypnotherapy had evoked from deep in their minds. When asked how they felt about the experience, one word best summed it up: violated. Ray Fowler would write about the experiences in a book titled The Allegash Abductions: Undeniable Evidence of Alien Intervention. A condensed version of a report he had written about the men's hypnosis sessions with Constantino, the book would thrust the men into the limelight, with appearances on radio and television, including a special report on the popular show Unsolved Mysteries. The book also contained a collection of artistic interpretations of the event, painted and drawn by the Allegash Four. The haunting depictions of their experience added a whole new dimension to their tale. Images of a beam of light pulling the men from their canoe, the horrors they suffered on the examination table, and the chilling faces of their alien abductors. In the years after Fowler's book was published, the four men went on to appear at numerous UFO conventions and symposiums to tell their story. They spoke with others who claimed they, too, had seen strange spacecraft in the night skies and had been abducted by extraterrestrial creatures that performed unspeakable acts on them. There were, of course, naysayers and skeptics as well. The most common theory about what happened to the Allagash Four was that the cultural zeitgeist, sci-fi films of the 1950s, and television documentaries about alien visitors and flying saucers had planted an idea in the men's heads. Hypnotherapy requires the patient to enter a highly suggestive state and to be guided through their lost memories with mental imagery in order to recreate and evoke that which is lost deep within the mind. Could the four friends have simply been guided down the wrong path? Fowler, after all, was a UFO investigator who believed he had his own abduction experience. It was Constantino who had helped Fowler recall his own terrifying encounter. Jim Weiner had met Fowler at a UFO convention. Is it possible that Jim's own biases bled through to the other men? It is interesting to note that Whitley Strieber's book, Communion, published in 1987 and made into a feature film starring Christopher Walken in 1989, contains eerie similarities to the tales that Jim, Jack, Chuck, and Charlie recollected while under a hypnotic trance. Whether their tales were the result of Hollywood sci-fi flicks, books, or television, in the many years that followed, the four men would stand by their claims, often recounting their story to anyone who would hear it. In 2016, however, one among them would cast serious doubt about their case of abduction in the isolated wilderness near the Allagash River some 40 years earlier. Chuck Rock, now a successful artist painting and selling landscapes and portraits in oil on canvas, had noticeably begun drifting away from his friends over the years. He no longer attended the various UFO conventions or made special appearances, and refused to speak publicly about his experience. Finally, one day he broke his silence and told a startling, but much more down-to-earth story about what the four men had truly experienced on that fateful night. Rock now said that although they had seen a bright craft flying through the star-streaked skies of northern Maine in 1976, their story of alien abduction was merely a scheme to make money. He claimed that the other three men had recalled the bizarre experiences after the hypnosis sessions, but that he had no such memories and that he had only gone along with his friends because they believed they could make millions off their story, which did not come to pass. To make matters worse, Rock also said that Jack Weiner had brought drugs with him on their camping trip and that they had each taken some before heading out onto the lake just before their sighting. When asked if he felt what he and the others had done was an outright deception, Rock would say that he believed it was simply brilliant storytelling, and that he actually admired the ability of his former friends to spin their fantastic tales. As for the other men, however, they have stuck to their story, never wavering. They blame bitter feelings on Rock's part as the impetus for his splintering from the group and disparaging the story of their abduction. They have even gone so far as to claim that Rock believed that now denouncing the story would bring it back into attention and potentially make him more money in the process. Were the four art students simply out to get rich? Or were the men truly taken by alien creatures deep within the woods of the Allagash wilderness on that warm, clear night in the summer of 1976? The truth will likely forever remain a mystery. We would love to hear your own thoughts and ideas about this extraordinary tale of alien abduction. If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Pixel Elixir, and on Instagram at Bite-Sized Frights. You can also subscribe at bitesizedfrights.com so that you never miss any of our terrifying tales. This has been a Pixel Elixir production, narrated by Chris Kay. Thank you for listening. Until the next bite, my friends.